And we start at the top of Lamed Amud Aleph. The Gemara is discussing what we saw in the Mishnah with regards to a beged that shotchad utzorchav ulechvudo, that you're allowed to stretch out, shake out a beged cloth, whatever fancy material, you're allowed to do it for the purpose or benefit of the item, but not for your own kavod when it comes to an aveda that you found. So Gemara says yivaylehu. Gemara has a question: the tzorcho or the tzorcha? What happens if it's both? Meaning that it's a symbiotic shaking out, which is that not only is it to the benefit of the cloth, but it's also to your benefit to do that. Are you allowed to do that? My Taishma, so let's try to be medayek from our mission itself. Shulcha the tzorcha. In our mission, it says you're allowed to shake it out for its own benefit. For the, I mean, it, meaning the clothing or the beged's benefit, you're allowed to shake it out. The tzorcha in, for its own benefit, yes. Ha tzorcho, tzorcha lo. But if it was for both yours and the beged's benefit, no. When it says, aim a safe, what are you going to do the second? Half of our mission says, there it says you can't shake it out for his own benefit, for his own honor, meaning something that would make him, for instance, hang out something fancy, a tapestry, or some beautiful throat that he would put over the couch, so that he can't do l'chvodo hudula, that he can't do it for his own benefit. Ha, l'tzorcha, l'tzorcho shapir. Had it been both for his benefit and the benefit of the item, it would be okay, shapir dami. Eloha, lekamash mina. So from our Mishnah, it's inconclusive, because our Mishnah, you can be medayik, depending on which part of the Mishnah you pick, you can be medayik either way. Tashma, lo ishtachena, lo agabi mita, velo agabi magod. Are you not allowed to stretch it out or throw it out over your bed, over a bed. Lo gabi magud, and on the top of what seems to be some sort of clothesline, some sort of laundry line, clothesline, the tzorcho, for your own benefit. Al yishtachen al gabi mita, val gabi magud, the tzorcha. You can stretch out over these items for its own benefit. Nizdamu lo orchid. If guests come, lo yishtachen al gabi mita, lo gabi magud. Ben tzorcho, ben tzorcha. So if you have guests coming over, he is not allowed to stretch it out, whether for its his benefit or for the benefit of the item itself. So there you see that it's pretty clear from this, Bryce, that we're quoting right now, that had it been for the benefit of the item itself, if a guest's coming, guests are going to see it, they're going to think it's his, it's going to be to his benefit as well, but it's certainly the reason that he's spreading it out on the bed or the clothing line is for the benefit of the object itself. Nevertheless, we say, don't do it. Where it says, no, shiny hug them. Over there, it's a different story. There, the restriction is not because of his benefit or the benefit of the item, but rather, the mekala kalila. He is burning it up. By placing it out when there are guests coming over, he's burning it up. Why? Imishum eina, imishum ganbe. Because when guests come over, there are two things that can happen. Either they can be jealous, and they'll bet an ayin hara on the object. Now, it's not his object to allow an ayin hara to take place and to ruin the object. Or Mishum Ganve, that the guests will see it and they'll say, wow, you know, maybe I'll take this, or I know to come back here to take this item. So his exposing of the item is actually to the detriment of the item itself. It's not simply that he's placing it out to the benefit of this item, and a side benefit to Zorchim see it, and they think that he has this beautiful tapestry, this beautiful throw. But no, that when he puts it out, he's actually putting the item at risk of disappearing, that it won't be there anymore, either because of Ayin Hara or because of Ganve. So Tashma, now the Gemara is going to bring a proof from Parah Duma or from Egla Rufa. Says Hichnisa l'Rav Ka. He took the para and he put it into a Rav Ka. Rav Ka seems to be a sort of old, some sort of brace that they use to put the animals together in order to have them work together. V'dasha, and then he does the dash, the melech of dash of crushing the tvua, the grain, in order to separate the chaff from the stems from the top, the kernels. So during that process, ksheira, then the animals will say, oh, b'shpil, shetinak, v'tidosh, sula. The other hand, if he brings it in order that it should nurse, and at the same time while it's going to nurse, it'll also be dash, then it is sula. It's sula. So Rashi says this case is talking about a case of an egla rufa. In a case of egla rufa, that this is the first, the ratio will say that in that case it's ksheira, and the second case it's sula. Because there is a requirement, we'll see in a second from the post, a requirement by the Egla Rufa that it be not be worked. It has not be worked at all. So now the Gemara says, Vahahachal. Over here is the Litzorcho Ulitzorchahu. It's both to his benefit and the benefit of the animal. I mean, the animal needs to nurse. On the other hand, by going into nurse, it's also going to end up being dash, doing the melacha of dash. And over there, it's for the benefit of the Balabait. Viktani Psula. Over there it says that it's Pasul. So the Gemara says, Shani Hatam Dhamma Kra. The post says, Asher Lo Badba. that there was no work done by it. Mikol makom, doesn't matter how the work was created or done. Doesn't matter whether you did it solely for its work or any type of work. It passes. It creates a psul in the animal and cannot be used for an egla rufa. So now, if that's the case, even the first case of the egla rufa here, where you take it in, you lock it up with the other animals, and it walks around with them, as you're putting it into some sort of ol, then it's also be psula. Says Adam, it's not compared to the other, to another case. Now the Gemara is going to bring a Mishnah from Para, which is talking about Para Aduma. Tosfos here mentions that the case that we just mentioned of Avichnisa Rilo Ravka, he placed it into the Ravka, he says then Tosefta, he says that's also referencing a Para Aduma. The Gemara tells us the cases all could be by Para Aduma. I would say the pasuk they quote from Dvarim is a pasuk by Egla Rufa. That's why Rashi, the pshat that, and Rashi was explaining that the first case is Egla Rufa. Now we're going to bring a proof from Para Aduma. The Tanan, we have a Mishnah by Para Aduma, Shachen Ala Of. Kshera. If a bird lands on the back of the Para Aduma, then it's still a kasher kshera Para Aduma, because the fact that an oof sat on it is not work for the animal when it's walking to classify it as being pasul now for being a Para Aduma. On the other hand, if it was actually to do work, if you did something work with this animal, it would be pasul for a Para Aduma. So my says, my time. Well, what's the reason when the oof, when the bird lands on its back, that it's okay? Damar Rav Papa said, "Iktiv, if it had written ubad, vikrinen ubad, meaning that the pasuk itself is written, had it written with the vav in the word, it would have been ubad, ubad, vikrinen ubad, havamina filu memela. Ubad is the passive form of the verb to do work with it, which means that work was done with this animal. So it's irrespective of who did the work with this animal or who caused the animal to work. Shel ubad ba, in the passive form of the verb, means that any work done with this animal would make it pasul." So had the Torah written the word ubad, and it was pronounced ubad, that would have been the case. Avamina filu memela. If it had written, right, the case, if it had written obeid or avadba, or krinin avad, avamina the avadba, that if he does work with it, ihu, meaning that the owner does. If it was the active form of the verb, right, the avadba, or obeidba, that he does work with this animal, then the only way you would think the animal would become pasul is if the owner himself, right, did work with this animal, because that's the active form of the verb. But we don't have that. We have a mix of both. Why is that? Hashadiktiv avad. Our Torah, it's written ayin vet dalet without the vav in it. So had you had no misora about how to pronounce this word, you would have thought the word was pronounced either avad or vet, that it was the active form of the verb. But nevertheless, we have a misora of kri, that we read the verb as ubad. Even though it's written as avad, we read it as ubad, ba. Be'inan, so what, how does this work? Be'inan, ubad, dumyo davad. Then the passive form of the verb, the passive work, has to be the same as the active form. How's that? Ma'avad denechle, avubad denechle. It has to be that just like when a person does active work with the animal, that is to his pleasure, right? To his, that's what he wants the animal to do. So too, in the passive form of work, the only time we're going to say that the passive form of work is a psul for the Para Aduma, is if this is something that he wants to happen. If he wants it to happen, then it'll be, right, a psul in the animal. If he does not want it to happen, it will not be a psul in the animal. We had a similar type of case, or similar concept. The Gemara does the exact same thing by Mukshar the Kabel Tuma. Mayim, that is Makshir, an object. I mean, Kabel Tuma, there the Torah writes Itain, and it's pronounced, the Kri is Yutan. So again, over there, the active form would be Yitain, Yutan is the passive form, and we have the same drush over there that if it's placed passively, it only works if it plays passively if you would want it. Just like you would want it when it was actively pursued, so too when it's passively pursued, it would also be. So here the difference, or the way to look at Para Dumar Egla Rufa, is because when the work is done actively, for sure, the animal is pasul or psula, is unable to be used as an Egla Rufa, or unable to be used as a Para Duma. On the other hand, if work happens because memela, meaning that because of the situation in which the animal is, work happens. Now, if you want that to be the case, like for instance, where Tinok Vitidash, where he puts it into nursery and it's also dash at the same time, then we say then that's absurd, because you did it, even though it was happened memela, it happened passively, nevertheless, because you are happy with this, and your acquiescence or your pleasure with what the animal is doing is equivalent to assigning it an active work, or you're actually driving the animal to do this. The other hand, if it does it because it's locked up with the other animals, and you want there just to keep them together and to make sure that they're all, you know, in one line, and then it goes, happens to go with these animals and be dash, and that's not what you want this animal to do, then it will not be a psul in the parar, the eglah, because you have no interest in this animal doing work. It happens to be the circumstance in which it is. It does do work, but that's not your interest, not your pleasure. So this case, Tosos brings up an interesting question here. Tosos asks a very simple question. He says, why would a person ever want the animal to do work? Why? I have a paraduma. Paraduma is expensive, valuable item. So now, okay, you say, okay, it's great. He was dashed the material here. But why wouldn't I always say that it's not to my benefit, not to my pleasure, not something that I'd want to happen? Because if he does this, it's going to be psula, to be a paraduma, and it'll no longer be worth what it's all the value. So why don't we automatically say the guy definitely doesn't want this to happen, because otherwise he's going to lose all the value in the paraduma. Very simple question. So Tosa says over here, it's in the Tosa of Uvada Dnei Chalei. Vim Tomar, Vala Aleha Zachar. So my psula, for instance, what happens when a person is breeding this paraduma? Right, it's a couple lines down in the Tosfos there. It's like the first question says Vim Tomar. It's right by there, Ben Ochanano. I don't know if you can see it. Vim Tomar Aleha Zachar, my psula. Ha vaday lo nechale lehafsil parash dameha yekarim bishvel dvar muat. Say he's breeding this animal, and a male then breeds with this paraduma, and he goes, oh great, now I'll have babies, you know, also on paradumot. But then he's going to lose, if this happens, and the zachar, right, is breeding with this paraduma, it's going to be psula to be a paraduma. So his benefit is so little compared to the loss that's been caused now at this point, which is going to lose the whole paraduma. So why wouldn't we say automatically that he would never want that to happen? That he would never want this type of behavior? V'yei Shlomar, so close to his answer, is very important because it's major enough communal balach. He says, V'yei Shlomar, dimaitak shira, avanechle. Had it been the case that if a zachar, if they had bred the animals, that would not have been a psul in paraduma, he would have wanted it to happen. I mean, the reason he doesn't want it to happen has nothing to do with the event that's taking place over here, but it's a halachic ena nechale. So I'll explain the second one. It means lakach ena hakshir. So he says, v'im temumar yichnis l'rafka v'dasha maik shira. So why in the case where we put it, he puts it into some sort of a mechanism that holds all the animals together, and then they go in and dash a maik shira, maishna me'ala le'azachar dipsula. Why is that any different than the case when a breeding happens? Because there he doesn't make any money, basically. Because even with this animal being there, they would have four other animals over there that would go and dash, so he doesn't need this animal to do the work for him. So over there, there's really no benefit to him, and it's a big loss. So there he says, nolo nechle. But over here, by a breeding, right, breeding can only be done by this animal because that's the animal that the zachar got together with. And that money that he would be benefit from that, we say, is enough to say that it's nechale, and we would say that it ruins the paraduma from being a paraduma. So what Tosfos basically laid out here is an amazing principle, but a very important principle, is that we have in halacha something called ol nechale, things that a person does not want to happen. For instance, in Shabbos we have something that would happen automatically if you did it, but because you don't want it to happen, right, then maybe we don't assign you that melacha or something you do not intend for. Maybe the lonechle, things that you don't want to happen. Maybe that is davar she'enu mitkaven, that's what you intend for, and something that you don't want to happen. So when we say you don't want it to happen, how do we define lonechle? How do we define the fact that you don't want it to happen? So Tosfos over here introduces a new idea. That what means that you don't want it to happen doesn't simply mean that because the outcome, or halachically there will be an isur generated over here, because I don't want the halachic outcome, that is not considered lo nechle. That's not considered that I don't want it to happen. Because, but if we stripped away the halachic implications, you would want it to happen. And that's what Tosfos Mechadesh here. That you have to look at the case independent of its halachic implications, independent of the surim that are here. So because of that, Shlomo Zalman Orbach quotes, and unbelievable, it's in a tshuva in the Be'al Shabbos. He quotes this Tosfos. So you think this Tosfos is middle of nowhere? This Tosfos happens to be, it's more related to a Gemara Psachim of a Psik Rishal of Nechle, but he quotes this Tosfos to deal with the question. Person wants to know if he opens, a person who normally has a fridge, and the fridge has a light inside the fridge. Every Shabbos he unscrews the light bulb or he turns the light off before Shabbos so that he can open up the fridge. On Shabbos, one Shabbos, he forgets to undo the light bulb. So yeah, if he gets the under the light bulb, if he opens up the fridge, the light will go on automatically. That is called a psik reshe. Psik reshe, which is a basically action reaction, something automatically will happen. If you take one action, the other action will happen automatically. Here, if he opens the fridge door, automatically the light will be turned on. So that's a psik reshe. But what they want to argue is it's the lo nechle. It's a psik reshe the lo nechle. Why is it a psik reshe the lo nechle? He does not want the light to come on. Right. So the question is, why does he not want the light to come on? Right. Is it he doesn't want the light to come on because the light is of no use to him? Or is the reason he doesn't want the light to come on is because that he will violate the Shabbos if the light comes on? So Tosfos is right. So the like you're suggesting, Rav Shlomo Zalman quotes this Tosfos to say that when we look at Lo Nechle, we only look at the real implications of your opening it up, not the halachic implications of your opening it up. So he says, Rav Shlomo Zalman writes over here, he wants to open the door and he realizes he hasn't taken out the light. Because you're going to turn on the light automatically. And we know from his previous behavior that every Shabbos he takes out the light bulb. And now he tried to find the non-Jew to open the fridge, so we know he doesn't want the light bulb to come on. And now he's very upset about it. And it's clear that he doesn't want the melacha of the light going on happen because of him on Shabbos. It's clear to me this is considered psik reshe that he wants. And according to everybody, you can't open this door. Even according to the people who say when it's a psik reshe that he doesn't want, then it's permitted. Over here, it's not. Had we told him now that on Shabbos you can open up a light, no problem, he would open the door of the fridge with the light on and be very happy because he has a light inside of his fridge. Of course, a person would prefer to have light in their fridge than not have light in their fridge. The only reason, Moshe Shaninu Le'inyan Parah Duma. This is where Rav Shlomo Zalman quotes this, the Ketosis here. Like we learn by Parah Duma, Dim Allah Le Zachar Psula. If it's used for breeding, it's Psula. V'hikshu Atosvot. The Tosvot asked the question, he quotes the Psachim, the Gemara in Psachim, Kovav Amrebet, but here in ours, in Bob Metzil Lamed Aleph, the Tosvot asked the exact same question. In other places like our Gemara here, Amai Psula. Why should be Pasul? Havadai lo nechle. He surely doesn't want it. Vahafsi parash at the Meir Yikarim b'shul dvar mu'at. He's going to lose the whole value of this paraduma because of breeding. V'tirtu, and they answer Mishum, Dim Nemar Shik Sheira. Had we told the guy that breeding is fine for paraduma, have a nechle. He would have been fine with it. V'chein, Ein lach shira, V'adin gamkin. The same din over here. So Rav Shlomo Zalman, we don't even think about that paraduma, this connection. Rav Shlomo Zalman pulls this Tosfos to prove that if a person has a light on their fridge and it's going to be a psik reshe, and you reclaim it's a psik reshe of the Lonech Leh, he does not want the light to come on Shabbos, because if the light comes on, he's going to violate the Shabbos. He certainly does not want this to happen. So he says, no. Rav Shlomo Zalman says, that's exactly what Tosfos claims. Tosfos claims that Nech Leh and no Nech Leh are not determined by the halachic implications of your actions. They are only simply determined by the realistic or the reality of whether a person who opens a fridge, had it been mutar, he would have enjoyed the light. If a person could breed a paraduma and was mutar, he would be very happy. So then we don't say that the halachic implications of your action therefore make it enlod echele. We do not consider, within the context of this person's view of the action he's about to take, we do not put in that consideration the halachic Isur that will be violated when you come, that will not make it into a nilo nechle, or the halachic implications of making it into a paraduma psula, that does not come into, is not a factor in determining whether it's nechle or no nechle. Wow. Very important Tosfos, but amazing, Shlomo Zalman quotes it as a source for psik reshe lo nechle. And the main sukkah of lo nechle is not here, but I figured we had the Tosfos anyway, we may as well quote Rav Shlomo Zalman. Alright. Klei chesef uklei nechoshin mishtamesh ben. So the Mishnah says that when it comes to silver and copper, utensils, you may use them. Turn about on will secretly eats mishtamesh behem. When you find wooden kelim, you can use them. Bishvil shalo your kavu, so they don't rot. Right? So they don't go bad, they don't rot, you can use them. Klei nechoshet, if it comes to copper, mishtamesh behem b'chamim, avalo yedei or. You can use hot water or cold water, anything hot and cold in them, but you can't use them directly on the fire, because that will ruin them. Mishtamesh mashchikan. use them directly on the fire, it wears them down, right? It would it deteriorates the clay, so we would not want that. Clay kesef, the silver kelim, mishtamesh ben b'tzonein, you can use them with cold, avlo b'chamin, but not with hot, mipnei shemashkiran, because otherwise it tarnishes them. The hot and silver will tarnish them, therefore we do not allow that to happen. Magrefot, comes to shovels, b'kardumot, and let's call them hatchets. Mishtamesh ben b'rach, avlo b'kasher. And you can use them, now you can read this one of two ways. The way I thought I would have read it was that you can use them with soft items and not hard items. Meaning that you can shovel soft items and you can hatchet soft items because that does not bring a wear and tear on the object. I saw other interpretations that say barach and kasher means that you can use them lightly and not heavy-handedly. That you can use them in a light manner, you can't use them in a heavy-duty manner. Right? Whichever way it'll be, what's the reason you can't do the other? Why can't you cut hard things or solid things? Or why can't you use them in a heavy-handed manner? Because, again, there's wear and tear. It would wear down the object, and that's not what we want you to do. We want you to use them to keep them in service so they don't go bad, but we don't want to use them to the point where you're actually diminishing or deteriorating the value of the object. Right? When it comes to gold and glass, don't touch them. Because zahav can stay. Zahav does not oxidize, doesn't tarnish, doesn't turn green like copper. Rather, you know, zahav, you can place it in the ground, and same thing with glass, you can just bury it in the ground, keep it till the person comes, take it out, and it'll be the same way it was when you found it. Now, kederach shamru b'aveda, kachamru b'pikadon. Just the same way that you treat an aveda, so too by pikadon. If you're a shomer, somebody leaves you something to watch, you can treat them in the same way. Mar says, pikadon, mavateka bay. Wait a minute, a pikadon, somebody asks you to watch something, they're not asking you to use it, they're asking you to watch it. How could you take it out and start using it? I says, no, I'm Rabbi Bachama, Rav Sheshi, pikadon, shachu balem, the midnat yam. It's a case where someone gives you a pikadon, and they're gone for an extended period of time. They're gone for an extended period of time, it's clear that the person who left it with you doesn't want you to simply leave it in the ground and let it go bad. They want you to take care of it in a manner which would preserve the level or integrity or value of the object when they gave it to you. So how do you protect an object? How do you protect silver from tarnishing? Right, you use it a little bit, but you don't use it extensively. You don't use it with hot water, you use it with cold water. How do you prevent a wood from going bad? Is that you use it. So in all these instances, the usage is not because you're benefiting for your personal benefit, but rather because you want to preserve the actual item. So again, it only can be usage to the point where it preserves it, but not to the point where it's all to your benefit. It doesn't all accrue to your benefit. When it comes to items that, for instance, that are beneath his dignity to pick up, we don't demand of him to pick up such an aveda. How do you know that? It says that you will turn your eyes away, that you will pretend as if you didn't see. So over there, pamim shatam italim, upamim shi'iatam alim. There's sometimes by the pasuk of aveda, there are actually two requirements. One is a shave tashibim, that you actually have to return the object that you find. But also there's a restriction against being mit'alim, looking away. If you see someone's object, and you could have returned it, or you could have taken it in, and you turn away, and you look away, there's an isur lav not to turn away from taking the object. But the way the pasuk is phrased, it says, v'ilam tamam, it sounds like there might be a time when you're allowed to turn away. When are the times that you're allowed to turn away? Pa'im shi'atam mit'alim, ha'ketzad. If it's a Kohen, it's found in the cemetery, then he can't go in there. Or if it's a Zakain and it's not up to his, it's beneath his dignity to pick up Chatzin. Or the case where the value of the work that you're doing, or it's evidence that you charge by the hour, and this person can earn so much more money than the value of the Veda. The value of his work encompasses the entire value of the Veda, and therefore it's not worth the time, giving up the time from his work to pick it up. What do I need the pasuk for? You name me three cases. Do I need the pasuk for the three cases over here? Why? What's the hava mean that a kohen can go into the Beit HaKvarot to pick up an aveda? By aveda yevasei of hashev tashibim. By the Isur of a coin becoming Tameh, you have an essay and a lotase. You have an essay of Kedoshim to you, and you have a lotase of Loitama. So he has we never say that the essay, for instance, of any essay can be docha, an essay possibly be docha lotase, but an essay cannot be docha, an essay and a lotase. When there's a double, where there's both an essay and a lotase, it cannot overcome the essay and the lotase. On the other hand, as Rashi points out here, even though there is a lav by Aveda, there's also a lav by Aveda. So you have an asay and a lotase both by the Aveda. You have an asay and a lotase also by Kohen. The lotase is irrelevant over here. Because a lotase is not doche other items. And asay can be doche other items. So the only thing the Gemara deals with here is the asay of Aveda. It ignores the lotase. There is a machlokus in the Tosafot throughout Shas about when you have an asay doche lotase. Right, how does it work, for instance, when you have an assay that comes up against an assay and a lotase? Like, instance here, you have a veda, that's an assay, and then you have an assay and a lotase of tuma, that he shouldn't become tuma. Do we say that the assay is docha the lotase? The assay works. The assay of a veda knocks off the lotase of tuma. The problem is that there's still an assay of tuma left, and that's what prevents you from going in, the kohen going into Beit HaKavarot, because then you'll violate the assay by going into the Beit HaKavarot. That's one way to look at it. If that is the case, for instance, if a kohen does go into Beit HaKavarot to get an Aveda, he won't get Malkus, because he didn't violate the Lotase. The Lotase was knocked off by the Asay. What's left is the Isur Asay. On the other hand, Tosfos in other places suggests no. And Tosfos in other places says no. What happens in the case when you have a Lotase and an Asay associated with it, the Asay strengthens the Lotase. The Asay gives extra power to the Lotase. By giving extra power to lotase, the assay of Aveda cannot knock off the lotase of Tumah. So in that instance, because the lotase of Tumah also has an assay associated with it, that assay strengthens the lotase of Tumah, and therefore the assay of Aveda can knock it off. In that case, if you go into the Beit HaKavarot, and you try to, and you go get an Aveda, you would get Malkus, because the lotase is still around, according to that day on Tosfos. So Malkus had a Tosfos throughout Shas. Again, in different places, Tosfos, some places he says that the assay is doche the lotase and the assay stands, that's what's left. Other places he says, no, that alima la lotase. It strengthened the lotase. He says also things, a lotase that has a karet and other things associated with it. If you have stronger lotases, the assay cannot overcome that lotase. Now it has implications. How do you know? Again, for instance, this sheet of Tosfos, how do you know when the lotase is really, when the assay is really coming to help the lotase, or the assay stands on its own? I heard from Rabbi Sachs. Rabbi Sachs speaks about it. This is with regards to the Gemara and Shabbos, different issue in Shabbos. But he points out that when you look at any specific halacha, that when there's an assay and a lotase involved in every halacha, you have to look at what is the major factor that the Torah is after, and then what do you think is being bolstering it? For instance, by tzedakah, there's a requirement to help out your friend when it comes to tzedakah, to give to your friend. There's also a restriction, a lav, a lo tametz levavchat, that do not hold back, do not be miserly. There's also a restriction in the Torah. Now, do you say that the Torah's main purpose in telling you this restriction is don't be miserly? Or is the main purpose of the Torah to tell you to give tzedakah? It's obvious that the Torah's main reason, the main focus here is give tzedakah. The lo tametz levavchat, don't be miserly, is just to support the lo tasset, the assay of giving tzedakah. There are other cases where the lo tasset is the main, for instance, right here. The main, or it seems to be, the main issue over here for the Kohen is bo tutama, the do not become tame. Alright, so now the assay, again, is going to support the lotase, the assay being kedoshim to you. You could argue the other way, that it's kedoshim to you is the overarching factor, and lotama as a support. But I think here it's clear that the Torah gives lavim, specific lavim, like lo itama. The kedoshim to you is the support, the assay is now supporting the lotase. So again, whenever you have an assay and a lotase together, you have to look. Maybe that's the way to explain the different shitot and tosfot. The Mishnah of Tosfos, how the assay affects the lotase, might have to do with what assay and a lotase are you talking about? Are you talking about a case where the lotase is the major factor here, and the assay is supporting the lotase, or is it the other way around, where the assay is the major factor, and the lotase is just supporting the assay? So maybe when it's the assay is the major factor, and the lotase is just supporting the assay, then maybe an assay can be doche for the lotase, and all that's left is the assay, and that's why you can't violate it. On the other hand, in a case where the lotase is the major factor, like here by Tuma, and then the assay of Toshin to you supports it, then we say that it strengthens the lotase so that the other assay of Aveda cannot overcome this lotase. Right, just a small touch on assay docha lotase. And now, Mer says, okay, obviously that can't be why we need a pasuk for it. And because, lotase, v'dachi lotase, v'assay, v'tu, and I have even a better reason for you, lotachin and isura becoming mamona. Aveda is an issue of mamon, Tuma is an issue of Isur. We're not going to allow you for Mammon to overcome, to violate an Isur for a Mammon issue, a monetary issue. Ela l'shalom rubam shel chaviro. So we need the pasuk to teach you that when your value is worth more, your work is worth more than picking up the Veda. So it says, midor Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Nafku. We can learn that out from Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Why? Damar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, efes kilo, yeh v'cha evyon, that it says that there should not be, right, any poor people. You should ensure that there are no poor people amongst you. That there's a requirement that you should not make yourself poor in helping other people. And that you can't bring yourself to the point of being a poverty in order to help others. That's not, the point is that you try to stop poverty. If you make yourself poor to help others, then you haven't stopped poverty. So we say that you have to ensure that the individual himself is taken care of before he takes care of others. So now the Gemara extends this, which is not so simple. The Gemara extends this to where you have more value. That it's more valuable for you to continue working than for you to pick up the avedah. Is that really an extension over here? Over here, the person by not working is not going to become poor. Right? He's not going to become poor by not working over here, by picking up the avedah. It's just that he will, the value created or the money that he makes will be great, much greater than the value he's saving for his friend. So what the Gemara is doing by extension here is saying that we prioritize your own personal benefit over the other people's benefit. That's a very hard halacha. That means, whenever it comes to tzedakah, if I can always say I can make more money, instead of taking time out to do chesed, taking out time to do, give tzedakah, maybe I should always work, because then I'll have more money. So I think there has to be a fine line here. It's not so clear how the Gemara, the extension of the Gemara here is a very, I think, a dangerous extension in the sense that, right, if you take it to its ultimate end, that means a person will always be selfish and self-focused. If they can make more money, which doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. Right, so you have to look to see, we've shown him and others that what the nuances here are, when do we say shalcha kodem? When do we say that you take priority? But it seems here where it's avedah, and it's a monetary issue, where the return of the avedah has to do with that returning the value to the individual, and preserving the value of this other individual. Over there we say that it doesn't make sense to give up so much value to protect someone else's value. In a sense, and we're going to see this, you could do the fnimishur at the din, a person could work, and then pay the person the loss of the avedah. He could actually return the money, and still he would end up with more money in the end. Alright, so that can't be what our pasuk is coming to teach us. Ela zakein v'le'inu lofi kvodo. Must be that the pasuk here is coming to teach us. This pasuk, b'talam tamem, is giving permission to a zakein, someone who is of a stature, of a certain ilk, that it's beneath his dignity to pick it up, that he's patur from picking up the avedah. It's beneath his dignity to pick it up, he doesn't have to pick it up. Amar Rabba, this is a separate statement here. Hekisha chayabba. If you hit it with the stick to drive the animal, you automatically become responsible for the animal at this point. You become responsible to return the avedah. Meaning that if you had passed by the avedah, and you were permitted to, say for instance, zaken if you kvodo, then you don't have to deal with it. On the other hand, if you get involved with the animal, like you hit it and you drive the animal, as soon as you interact with the avedah, you become responsible to take care of the avedah. It's always very important when you're looking at an avedah to be careful that once you pick up the avedah, you become responsible for it. You've now made some form of kinyan, even unintentionally here. Because if you're driving it, then you become responsible for the avedah. You always consider beforehand, before picking it up, whether you really want to become involved with the avedah, number one, because maybe it's better to leave it than to pick it up, because the balim will find it here. We had those sugyas earlier on. Or number two is, right, whether you really need this necessity for you to pick it up. If you pick it up, maybe you should do it all day. Have in mind that you're not making kinyan, you're not taking responsibility for it, just so that you are. But avoid this automatically becoming responsible for the avedah in a situation where it would be very difficult to get it back to the owner, or it would be to the detriment of the owner if you have to pick it up and deal with it now. Right, so now, Bai Yavi Yotiv Kameh the Rabbo. He was sitting in front of Rabbo. V'hachazalan avizeh, the kaimeh. He saw these goats that were floating around. These seem to be lost. Shokel kalo v'shodavu. He picked up a clod of dirt and threw it at them. You now are responsible for these animals. Kuma hajrinu. Go return them to their owners. Why? Because the kumla there he kisha. You drive the animal. Here, if you do something that is maybe otherwise considered kinyan, like in kedushin, hikisha, we learned Gemara Kedushin says that if you hit the animal, that's a form of kinyan. It's a form of kinyan. It's a form of kinyan here, and you do that to the avedah. You now that interaction with the avedah makes you responsible for the avedah. So now the Gemara goes back to Zakein Ve'Lefi Kvodo. The Gemara goes back to this idea of a Zakein Ve'Lefi Kvodo. The Gemara wants to know, Darkolach Zir Basateh, Ve'in Darkolach Zir Ba'ir. That it would be beneath his dignity to return an item if he was in the city, but if he was out in the field, it wouldn't be beneath, because nobody's looking. Out in the field, nobody's looking, and he would do it, and it's not beneath his dignity to do it in the field. Ma'u. So in this case, what happens? He finds it, one of the two cases, either he finds it out in the field, and then he starts bringing the avedah back into the city. But when he gets back to the city, it's going to be beneath his dignity to continue to work with this item. Or number two is he starts in the city where it was beneath his dignity, and then the item follows him or comes with him out into this field, because now he has to deal with it. So the question is, if it changes, that's the way Rashi reads it. When it changes locations, right, does he have to deal with it? I would have possibly read the Gemara, not like Rashi possibly, but case, is it possible where do we differentiate? If it's beneath his dignity in the city, and then in the field it's not beneath his dignity, do we demand of him then in the field or in the city to act in a different manner? That we have to have a full returning here. Since he won't complete the process of returning it, he won't be chayav. So if it's out in the field, don't even get involved with this animal, because by the time you get to the city, he's going to have to stop. So why even bring it to the point of the city? Because we know he's never going to be able to complete the process of Hashavat HaVeidah. Oh, Dilma Basademia, who the Chayivle. Or maybe we say no, that we look at each location independently. Why is in the field? He's got to deal with it. Fine, when he reaches the city, he can walk away from it. But at least the point to reach the city, he's got to deal with it. Chayivle, became the Chayivle Basadeh. Or do we say possibly, if he becomes Chayav in the Sadeh, then he can't leave it. Because once he's picked it up, now he's responsible for it, right? Basadeh, Chayivle Beir. And then he has to continue to deal with it, even though it's beneath his dignity, we get to the city. Teku. The Gemara leaves us all as a Teku. And they don't know how to be Magdir when there are, you know, half situations, they don't know how to be magdirit. Amarovo. Kol shalom machzir, b'shel chavero nami machzir. What's the test to know whether it's beneath your dignity to pick something up? Is if it was your item and you would deal with it, then you deal with someone else's item. That's basically it, right? I mean, that's the test. The objective test is, if you would do something for yourself, you do it for someone else. Right? V'chol shalom parek v'toin. And the same halacha comes to with loading and unloading something. There's a requirement in Torah to help a person who is burdened to unload or reload them up. If they need your help, you have to help them out. Now again, there's a dispensation for someone who's able lifik vodo that he does not have to help out. So again, what's the test? What's the litmus test to know whether you are have to help or not help? It says anything by yourself that you would help load up for yourself or for your own benefit or unload for your own benefit. But shachavero nami parek v'toin. You have to unload or load your friend in a similar manner. Rabbi Shmuel be Rabbi Yosi ava ka'azel be'orcho. He was walking along the way. Pogobehu garba davidori patcho dofe. He found he bumped into a guy that was on his shoulder, was carrying a bunch of wood, a pile of wood on his back, on his shoulder. Odvinu, he took them off. It was very heavy. He needed to rest, so he took them off. Ubekamitpach, and he was resting, sitting to rest. Then he wanted to get up and reload himself, but he couldn't load the wood onto himself by himself. He needed help. So Amalei Dalili says to Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, help me load myself up. Amalei Kamashavin, how much is this wood worth? Amalei Pagod Zuz, it's worth half a Zuz. Yaivle Pagod Zuz, he hands him half a Zuz, he says, you know, whatever, I'm not going to help you load up, but here's your half a Zuz. Vafro, and then he was Mafkirit. The question here is, why was he Mafkirit? Tosu says he was Mafkirit so that other people wouldn't have a problem with Gezel. Because it belonged to this guy by being Mafkirit. Now after he bought it, he was Mafkirit so that other people could take it, there wouldn't be an issue of Gezel. Tosfos here discusses how do you create hefker without three people, with three people, how do you create hefker? It's probably a side, not our issue, but a side issue, just be aware. So he says, Hadar Zachavu, this guy who was carrying the wood grabbed him back again. He says, help me put it back on again. He says, Hadar Yagli Pagus, give me a half zuz, but after all, and then he was mafkirit again. Chazya, so he did this, you know, again. And did it again. He saw the guy was going back to take them again. When I was mafkir this time, I made a hefker for everybody else besides you. Somebody says, does hefker really work that way? Can you really be mafkir? When you say I disown something, can you disown it to everybody except an individual? Well, that means you are exerting ownership. By denying someone else access to it, that means you are exerting ownership. Is that really hefker? That's not. We have a Mishnah, machlokas in the Mishnayot in Peah. Hefker le'aniyin hefker. If you want to say, when you're patur, when it comes to hefker, you're patur from ma'aser. Someone makes something hefker just for aniyim and not for ashirim, is it hefker? Beit Shammai says yes. Beit Hillel Amrim, eino hefker, acheya hefker le'aniyim le'ashirim kishmita. You know what it's called hefker? It's called hefker when anybody has access to it. If only certain people have access to it, that's not hefker. That's called ownership, because you are exerting or limiting people who can access it. So but if that's the case, he wasn't mafkir over here. So why does it work? Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Solo Kuliyah Mafkirino. Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Solo, truthfully or honestly, was mafkir to anybody. But he told this guy this, he told him like a white lie over here, because he knew the guy was going to go back and take it. Otherwise, it cost him more money. Mar says, well, what was Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi doing here at all? Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi zakein bein lefnei kvodo haba. It was not. It was beneath his dignity, right? It was beneath his dignity to lift up the wood and place it in a toin. He wouldn't have done it for himself.
So why does he have to tolain? Why does he have to lift it up and load up this guy? I mean that he has total permission to walk away and not load him up. So my says, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yosi, lifnim mishurta din hu da'avad. He did lifnim mishurta din. The Dani Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yosef, we learned in the Braisa, that we actually learned, the Dani Rabbi Yosef learned, Odata lehem. You should let them know, I mean, this is, Hashem is instructing Moshe to tell Bnei Yisrael, Odata lehem, zet beit chayehem. What do you have to tell them? What do you have to teach them? Beit chayehem, the house of their life. What is beit chayehem? Rashi over here says that you have to teach them umanut lit parnespo. You have to teach them trades, crafts. They have to teach them parnasa. That's what the pasuk. This means midoraisa, according to Rabbi Yosef, either esmachta the kraw or doraisa. That you would have to teach an individual. People have to gain a parnasa. They have to gain a way of making a living. Many point out here that Rashi in Baba Kama, when the same limud in Baba Kama says zebeit chayim is to teach them Torah. That you have to teach Bnei Yisrael, you have to teach your children, you have to teach individuals Torah. Over here, Rashi says it's Parnasa, and over there he says Torah. It's very interesting that steer between Rashi. I mean, you can reconcile, but the tension between the two is very obvious there. Eta Derech, what does it mean? Derech Zug Milut Chasadim. That's the Zug Milut Chasad. That's the way one lives, the way one acts should be an act, the way of Milut Chasad. Yelchu, what does it mean? Yelchu to go, ze bikur cholim, to go and be mevakir cholim. Ba, right? What does it mean? Yelchu ba in it, zukvura, to bury people. Et maaseh, right? If you teach them the maaseh, what's the action? Ze adin, right? What is it they should do? You should judge. People should have mishpat. Asher yasun that they should do is zulifnim mishpat adin. As that not only should they have din and judgment and courts and civil law, but that should also be they should be lifnim mishpat adin. They should ensure that they do things like Nimi Shurita did. Now we quoted, Tosfos over here quoted, we quoted this Tosfos a little earlier in the Gemara on the Chavdalat Amin Bet, that Tosfos over there suggests that there are actually three levels of Lifnim Mishurita Din. Because there is Mechadesh, the Rimi Orleans. I told you the Gemara in Baba Kama says it's the Shita of the Rimi Orleans. Rabbi here Tosfos Mechadesh that the only time we said Lifnim Mishurita Din is when a person's patur from doing something, well, other people would be Chayav. So, for instance, over here, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi is patur from helping this person load up. But anybody else in this situation would be chayav. So, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi can go and act with Nimishir at the din because other people are chayav. So, to be domel other people, there's an obligation to leave Nimishir at the din. That's the Chesh of Tosva, that's over there. That doesn't say, but we find in other places where that's not necessarily true. And other places where maybe it's not like that. So, Tosva then creates three categories of Nimishir at the din. Creates a category of Lefnim Mishurat HaDin, which is what we just described, which is Lefnim Mishurat HaDin, that is where other people are Chayav and you are Patur. There the Gemara brings, for instance, over here, a Pasuk, to prove that there is Lefnim Mishurat HaDin, and that's when the Torah obligates one to act Lefnim Mishurat HaDin. Therefore, it's Torah obligation to act Lefnim Mishurat HaDin, where others are Chayav and you are Patur. There are other cases where everybody is Patur, and yet there still is a demand of Lifnim Mishurat HaDin. Tosfos says there still. We don't have a pasuk for that. Right? But on the other hand, there is Lifnim Mishurat HaDin. When is that? When there's no monetary loss to you. If it costs you very little or almost nothing to act Lifnim Mishurat HaDin, then we're going to demand of you, even though everybody is patur, we're going to say to you, act Lifnim Mishurat HaDin, because it's not costing you anything to be nicer. It's not costing anything to do something that benefits other people. So act Lifnim Mishurat HaDin because there's no loss. It's almost like the midat stone, not to be a midat stone. If you can help others without costing yourself very little, then why not? I say tov too. Tosfos brings that third category. There's a third category of Lifnim Mishurat HaDin. Even when you have a loss, even when there is a loss and there's not, there would be monetary expense to you, that there is also an idea of Lifnim Mishurat HaDin, but that derives from l'man teilech b'derech tovim, to walk in the way of the good, to do good, to act good and to do good. That there is an additional, that's only mina navi, it's a pasuk mina navi, but it's just a person who's of a high madriga would also, even in that instance, maybe act lifnim mishurat hadin. But that lifnim mishurat hadin is very different, because that's not from the pasuk mina Torah, that's not what we're describing over here. That's lifnim mishurat hadin, that is simply someone who wants to be good and wants to act in a nice manner, right? She could go even to those lengths, even when there's a monetary loss. So back then we described those three levels of lifnim mishurat hadin. We also discussed the Tosfos of Baba Kama rejects this whole principle that the Pnimish of Din only applies when everybody else is Chayev and you are Patur. Tosus there categorically disagrees because of some of the questions that you have in the Tosus here in Bava Metzia. Instead of solving it with these three levels of Pnimish of Din, he rejects it. The Tosus in Bava Kama rejects it. Now, the Gemara is going to explain this little pasuk that we just darshaned. Amamar, Yelchu Zeh Bikur Cholim. I mean, you go and visit the sick in the Bikur Cholim. The Gemara says, isn't that synonymous with Hainu Gemilat Chasidim? Why does the Torah have to demand of you Gemilat Chesed plus Bikur Cholim? Bikur Cholim is just a subset of Gemilat Chesed. So in Nitzrukai, we only need this for Elul Ben Gilo, so the Gemara that we saw together in Nidarim. For someone of Ben Gilo, what is Ben Gilo? Alright, so Ben Gilo, we saw there are two interpretations of what Ben Gilo are. Rashi here in Bava Metzia, we just saw earlier in Ben Gilo, and the Ran in the Darim say Ben Gilo means somebody that is born in the same mazel. Someone's born either in the same zodiac, born in the same constellation as you. That is Ben Gilo. Rashi in the Darim, which obviously question about the quality as well as the you know how much we are somech on the Rashi in the Darim. But Rashi in the Darim says the Ben Gilo from the word Gil, age. Someone who's the same age as you, in the same age category as you. Either way, why? Damar Mar, Ben Gilo Notel Achad Mishishim Bechol Yom. And when a person who is Ben Gilo goes to visit someone that is sick, they take away 1/60th of the sickness. But not only do they take 1/60th of the sickness away, they actually get 1/60th of the sickness. So I would have a Havamina. I would have a Havamina that you are Patur from being Mevaker Cholev, it's Ben Gilo. Because you are, not only are you doing chesed, but you're endangered, meaning that you're taking on some detrimental factors. Not simply doing chesed, but you're also doing something negative to yourself, so maybe you would be patur from Bikur Cholim. Comes on the pasuk that says, even b'men kilo afilu hachim mevayla the mezel gabed. Even though that you're going to accept 1/60th of the sickness, you still have to visit. We obligate you to visit and take care of this individual. Ba zubik vura. Now we're talking about bearing the mate. Again, hainu gemilat chasadim. That's synonymous. It's a subset of gemilat chesed. Why is bearing the mate a separate category? Lo nitzuchai lo zakein v'en only faith vodo. We need it for a case when it's a zakein. Zakein the angel of Fikvodo, he says a tour in many instances of chesed or taking care of other individuals. So over here we say that even though it's zakein v'en ulfi kvodo, when it comes to making mitzvah, when it comes to taking care of a mate, we say there is no tour of zakein v'en ulfi kvodo. We obligate him to take care of the kvura, even though it's en ulfi kvodo. That this is an exception to the rule of zakein v'en ulfi kvodo. Alright, and now we have to say that even though in general we say that kavod abriyot is definitely, is doche, kavod abriyot is doche in certain instances, over here we say because of meis mitzvah and the kavod meis is so chamur, we're not going to allow kavod abriyot to overcome it here. Even though in other instances we see kavod abriyot can be doche lotase in the Torah by Sheib al Taseh, it has so much power. Kavod abriyot is so powerful that we don't obligate people in certain instances to do something or even allow them to violate the law in a passive manner. Nevertheless, over here, even though it's kavod abriyot, it's against this zakein's kavod, right? It's beneath his dignity to do this, so it would be kavod abriyot. Nevertheless, we demand of him to do it in this instance because it's a mace. And by mace mitzvah, it's chomir tzvei. Shemutol bibizayon, he's sitting there all not taking care of penyasriach, could rot, or people, dogs, or animals can come and eat the body. Because that, we obligate him and say, you must deal with it, even though it's beneath your dignity. What does it mean, the Fnim Mishrut HaDin? Yerushalayim was destroyed because they were Dan Din Torah. I says, what did you want them to do? Elawat, Dinei Demekizitka L'dainu? They should pervert the justice? Either, you can call it strong-arm justice or perverted justice. We saw this in Gemara in Bava Kama, the term that was used there. But obviously this is justice that's not Al-Pi HaTorah. So what do you want them to do? I mean, why would they destroy Yerushalayim if they were doing the right thing? Ella, Ema, Shemidu, Dinehem, Al-Din Torah. That they went ahead and they were done and they passed an alachab on the letter of the law. V'lo abdu l'fnim ishir t'din. They did not feel l'fnim ishir t'din. They did not take into consideration the obligation to look beyond the letter of the law. To act l'fnim ishir t'din. Tosfos asks the question right away. He says, the Gemara in Yoma says, why was the second base of the Mikdash destroyed? Mipnei, Sinat Chinam. So why is the Gemara here saying that the second base of the Mikdash was destroyed? Because of, they didn't go, Lifnei Mishir at the Din. So that is Tosfos answer the question. He says, Hava HaGarma. They're both causes. I would suggest, this is just a suggestion I heard, a very nice idea that they're one item, that they're the same thing. That Sinat Chinam, what does really Sinat Chinam mean? Right, so I heard this, I can't remember from whom now, in Tisha B'Av, but the idea of Sinat Chinam is not simply baseless hatred where there is no basis whatsoever for the hatred. That Sinat Chinam is disproportionate response. Meaning that, for instance, somebody did something to you. Somebody did something bad to you. So then, you hate them for the rest of your life. You won't talk to them. You won't do anything for them. You won't give them a kavod in the Beit Knesset. Whatever it is. That response is disproportionate to the wrong that they did to you. That's sinat chinam. Sinat chinam is not baseless in the sense that there is no basis for your hatred. It's baseless in the sense that it's a disproportionate response to the avlar, the wrong that someone did to you. So if I look at lifnim mishrut the din and din, right, these are both different sides of the din. I'd say that sinat chinam, based on that, there's din, which is the letter of the law. What would be the appropriate response, or the proper response, the letter of the law? Sinat chinam is someone who has a disproportionate response, extends on the negative side. They go beyond what should be the proper response, and they give too much of it. They give lifnim mishrut the din's the other way around. Lifnim the din's the opposite side of that is that if you take the din, I'm going to do less than the din demands. Right? I'm going to go lifnim mishrut the din. I'm going to do less than the din demands because I want to be kind to others. I want to do good for others. So I say that they're the same problem. They're the same exact problem. Someone who is sinat chinam, right, is taking din as almost a disproportionate. He's taking extending din beyond. Same thing with someone who doesn't take lifnim mishrut the din, only acts in din. He's acting within the letter of the law, but again, it's disproportionate, it's incorrect, because a person should try to act with nimishur of the din. He should try to act less tied to the letter of the law, but before the letter. And if he acts with the letter of the law, then it, almost in a sense, it's disproportionate, because he shouldn't be acting that way, he should be acting with nimishur of the din. But to suggest that they're the same item, not two different items, but something that derives from the same yikuda, the same problem, or a misguiding, or a misappropriation of what din is and how to respond in certain situations, which obviously, unfortunately, today also has in the Jewish world has problems about the proper response to things that go wrong or items that are considered to be inappropriate. All right, next Mishnah. Ezui avedah. What is considered a avedah? Matzah chamor upara ro'im baderech en zu avedah. If you see a donkey or a cow that's kind of wandering around on the derech, that's not avedah. Chamor v'kelav avuchim. If you see them and their saddles are turned over or their loads are hanging off the side, right? Or para ratza ben akramim, or you see a para that is running through the vineyards. So these would be out of place. I mean, a chamor that's got its loads that are flipped over and its saddles are like all off kilter. And you have a cow running through the vineyards. In that case, it's clear that this is not what you expect to see. If the balim are around, if this is not lost, then you can assume this is an aveda. If zero barcha, if he returns the item, and then it runs away. If zero barcha, and he returns it and runs away again. Afil arba v'chamisha piyamim, even four or five times. Hayav lach zira. Again, you have to return it in these cases. In all these cases, you have to return the item. Shinemar, Hashem Teshivim. Again, the double Hashem of Hashem Teshivim means even multiple times you are obligated. Ayata Batel Misela. So if by returning the Avedah you lost out work or labor charges of a Sela, Lo Yomar Lo Tain Li Sela. You can't demand your full wages with return. Ela No Tain Lo Skaro Kipo El. That he pays him as if he was a regular laborer, meaning that let's call it blue collar, a lowly paid worker, and you pay him for that, meaning that he did do some work for you, but you don't have to pay him at the extended rates of what he's really worth, but you pay him at the basic rate. If there is a basin, it can be matnem fnei basin, ancient basin, fnei mitzneh. If there's no basin there, right, then how can he has no ability to make a tnai, shalom kodim, then your item goes first. Right, so now what does that mean? So let's look at the Rashi. I should say the nation based him in Noach Loli Truach Luter, Delar Botzchar, Beino Chafezi, but tell me Melachto. Person wants to work for his own because he'll make so much more money, that's what we saw above, at Shalom Kodim, there's a din of Shalom Kodim, and he wants to do it. Mayase. He doesn't want to lose the Aveda because he feels it's wrong to walk by the Aveda. On the other hand, if he doesn't go to work now, if he can work for another hour and he's getting paid $400 an hour, it's much better for him to go to work than it is to pick up the Aveda. So what can he do? If he has Shlosha B'nei Adam there, if the three people stand there, he can make a tonight in front of the basin. He says, look, this is how much money I would have made. I'm going to give that up to pick up this Aveda. Truthfully, I wouldn't even do this. EFSHI, I wouldn't have done this. But I'm going to do him the favor and pick it up anyway. But, right, EFSHI Levato, but I'm not going to only do this on condition that I will get paid in full. So then he can do that. If there is no basin there, to inform who you can condition that Shlo Kodem. He can make a decision to go on his own, which was what we saw above from the Pasuk that we say above. So Gemara says, Atu Kohani Darminan Lava Vedahabu. All the other stuff that we mentioned in the previous Mishnayot, those aren't Avedot. The only thing that's considered Aveda is what's listed in this Mishnah, all of a sudden. What is the general principle that we establish that means Aveda? That you're responsible for return. This is not what you would classify in the category of Aveda. And it's not obligated to return. It's a parah running around the Kremim. Rashi says the Mistakva. It's a case where he's getting caught up in the thicket and he's getting cut. So it's obvious that he doesn't belong there. This is the type of Aveda that you are responsible for return. So Mar says, oh, the Olam. Right? Meaning that, how long can it be wandering around on the street that you still say that it's not lost, that's not an Aveda? Forever? What's the limitation where we say now it is lost versus when it's not lost? For 3 days, it's considered normal for animals to wander around. Beyond that point in time, it's not considered to be normal. What's the case? If it's at night, if you look at the Shatunami, and even 1 hour there, the animals don't belong out of their pens, out of their, where they are locked up at night. If they're running around at night, then it's clear that they're lost. Even Yomama, Afilutuva Namilo. As during the daytime, even more days, it should not be classified as being lost because it's classified normal that animals wander around during the day. Lo, Nitzur, Lo Tzricha, Dahavachazila, Bekadmata, Ubechashachta, Vatayomi. He saw it for 3 days. In the morning, before sunrise, before dawn, and at the time that it got dark. So he's at the beginning of the day, end of the day, he saw it for 3 days. Amrinan, it's Rumume, it's Ramila. Right? Venafka, Tvei Vadai Avedahi. Up until that point, we're going to say, yeah, it was just by chance. You know, the chance he got up early, or he came out early and went back that later at night. And that you can make an assumption for the animal that at some time he's running a little late getting back home. Or he let him out, he got out a little early this morning. If that happens once or twice or three times, you can say that was happenstance, or a chance, right? But over here, once it happens over a number of period of time, already we say, Vada Aveda. Beyond that point of time, we already assume, right, that is classified, or is that considered to be beyond the normal, and beyond the normal range, and therefore it will become automatically, we'll classify it as, or we'll classify it as Aveda, and then you'll be responsible to return it. Okay, we'll stop over here.